Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out to everybody that is tuning in via the National Indigenous Radio Service all around the country. Good morning to all you mob, especially the mob in the Pilbara, in Roeburn, that are always tuning in. Big shout out to them, mob. It wasn't relatively cold this morning. It was a bit, but you know, it hasn't been as cold as it has been lately. Which is a good thing, which is a sign, but then hopefully we're not due for a hot summer here in Brisbane in the Sunshine State. My guest in the studio this morning, Dean Gibson, is the director of a really, really deadly and important film called Wik vs. Queensland. The documentary tells the story of the Wik people of Cape York and their native title claim in the High Court of Australia. The documentary forensically tracks the lead up to the historic High Court decision, and in December 1996, the dramatic cultural and political fallout that followed afterwards. That's one of the things we want to talk a bit about later on in the program. But before we do that, good morning, Dean, and how you going?
Yeah, good morning, Bo. You've got the heater on in here, so you're not worried too much about the cold, hey? It's nice and cozy in here.
Nah. It's just when I'm on the bus, when I leave home, and in between home and here.
Yeah,
is the only time I'm worried.
It's a pleasure to be here, so thanks for having me.
No, it's all good. Also, for our listeners, I just want to apologise to Dean as well. I was crook on the last time you were coming in. I believe it was Tuesday. And you rocked up, and I was just too crook to.
We all get sick. It's all good. It's all good. I enjoyed going to have a cup of coffee. I scored a free hour of my day, which was nice. I could go and enjoy and sit down, have a cup of coffee, and relax. I don't get that too often with little kids and busy life. So, apology accepted, and it's great to be here this morning.
Thanks for that. For the beginning of our show, we like to get to know who we're talking to, paint the picture for our listeners. It's a very, very important thing, I guess, for radio people. So tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, where you grew up.
So I live here in Brisbane. I'm a filmmaker based in Brisbane. I've got two little kids, Hope and Jed, my wife Vanessa. So a little family up there on the north side of Brisbane in Sandgate, Brighton area on the bay. Lived there for sort of 10 years. Actually, we're celebrating our 10 years in our house this weekend.
Good.
Cool. But my family, a lot of my family are up in Hopevale, far north Queensland. So I sort of love telling people, let's go to Cairns and go another 4.5, 5 hours north of Cairns on the coast. So it's up family up there in Hopevale. I've never literally lived up there all my life. I've visited many times, but haven't lived up there. So I've got a lot of Gibsons that living up in Hopevale who I love to sort of catch up with when I get up that way. It's hard to get up there. But I'm a filmmaker. I've been doing this for probably about 14 years. And every day I sort of got to scratch my head and realize how lucky I am to be given this opportunity to just work with people to help them share their stories, meet really interesting people, and go to, get to go into some places where I would normally never get to visit, get to see really interesting things. So I don't take it for granted when people share their stories with me and I get to help them bring it to life on a documentary or a short film or whatever. So that's me, and I've lived here in Brisbane all my life, so I've never had strong links to my family up north. But I've loved being working in the film industry is that I've got to get up there more often and learn more about my family and learn more about the area up there around Hopevale and what that means to those people and respectively to me and get a sense of that history and the value of that history. And now having kids in Brisbane. Young 6-year-old and 8-year-olds start to sort of share with them the Aboriginal history of the area and get them to show interest and learn about that and understand where their family comes from as well. So it's always a journey.
No, it is.
But you know, it's certainly, I'm in a really lucky and privileged place, and I've been given great opportunities to sort of work with people and tell their stories.
Is that something that you've always wanted to be? Is this a director, a filmmaker, you know, a storyteller?
Yeah. Life's funny. You sort of go through chapters of life and you don't know what you want to do. And it's, you know, we're all in the same boat to a certain extent. But I think I've always had an interest in picking up cameras and getting my eye in a camera and seeing the world through a lens or through a viewfinder or through that kind of thing. So I've certainly had an interest in that all my life. You know, photos, really, I love looking at photos that capture a moment, a split second in history. And I think, you know, I love reading biographies. I mean, I don't get to do a lot of it, but I love hearing people's stories. I love hearing where they come from, and that's why I love listening to your show. I love where they come from, the kind of challenges, the kind of things they achieve, the kind of challenges they come up against, and how they sort of rise up and bring people around them to sort of do things, make things better for people, try and you know, create better opportunities for the young people, whatever it is. I love hearing those kind of stories and reading about those kind of stories. So it felt like a natural merge to get the camera and the storytelling and bring it all together. And then NITV came along. You know, that what an opportunity that was for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. 10 years ago, NITV came out of nowhere and said, we're going to give opportunities to people who don't normally get a look in. And I thought, wow, this is a great chance, and it's been a great catalyst, and I think it's been a great opportunity to share content and stories around the nation and around the world.
You did speak just then about, you know, your fondness for photos, for capturing the moment. How old was you when you first picked up a camera and took a shot?
Yeah, we didn't really own many cameras in our family, unfortunately. Yeah. So it was more, I think, more around the teenage years when I sort of got my first little Polaroid, it was a film camera, and sort of the old wind it up thing and take a shot. And, you know, you got to wait 6 weeks till you see the photo and hope it's a good one, you know. I'm not that kind of, unfortunately, I'm not that person who owned a camera since, you know, sitting in the cot beside me or something. No, I've just sort of enjoyed picking it up, and I still love picking up cameras, and I like, you know, these phones. Yeah. You know, I love taking photos on my phone and really just capturing a moment, a moment in history.
And you've said you've been in the film industry for quite some time, over 10 years, 14 years. Was it like, did you need to be in the film industry, I guess, you know, make a solid body of work to sort of bring something to life like this, like the story of the Wik people and this massive fight? Like, do you think you sort of been something that you would have tried to take on earlier on? Or?
No. No, I think you're exactly right. This film for me and my career probably couldn't have come any earlier. It was so complex. It's so rich. It required significant research and significant time to actually get it right, because it's important. It's important. Yes, obviously, like everything's important. This is significantly important because it's a national moment that played out across the nation and affected a lot of people.
Yes,
and we had to get it right. So I you're right. I couldn't have done this 6 years ago, 10 years ago. I needed the maturity to understand the craft. And the industry connections to make that work. I don't think I could have done it earlier, because it was just so complex. It was, you know, it was a three-year journey, this film, and it takes time, and it takes people around you, and it takes the maturity to sit back and look at, take in the whole time, the whole period of when you're, because our film is set in those mid-90s, so you can't just sort of pick and choose your moments in that period. You've got to sit back and look at the whole landscape, and then as a filmmaker, find the points that you want to tell within that landscape.
Yeah, and then also I think that's the most important thing is, and the hardest thing it would be, you know, trying to pick out, you know, what, you know, I guess what is good for the or appropriate for the, you know, for the documentary. And I'm sure, you know, you would have been sitting there thinking, oh, you know, do I really want to get rid of this part to put this part in? And also it's the significance of, you know, the people that are not necessarily here with us today that, you know, would have been seen within those documentaries. Okay. And because an important role in that as well are the grandchildren of some of the of the elders back then.
Yeah, and I think before I talk about those grandchildren as elders, you're right about everyone's story is important. Everyone's equally important. Mm. Everyone's got an equal important story. But the tough decision as the director and as the producers of the film is that we have to pick the ones that are going to help tell the story the best. And that what that does mean is that some stories don't. They hit the cutting room floor. You know, we had 20, 30, 25 hours of interviews.
Mm.
We had 2,000 hours of archive. We had news reports as long as we could just keep requesting news reports. There was almost everlasting news reports on the day. So the level of content to pick from is really hard, and you have to be really specific about who you choose and why. Mm. But yeah, having those elders. Families involved was quite amazing, and it, like everything we do in filmmaking and storytelling, you can't just sort of rock up to someone's house and say, "Give me your life story." It doesn't work like that. You got to spend the time and the energy to get the trust and, you know, get a relationship so that when you want to ask a couple of hard questions, where you know there were some points where they did, you know, you could see the grandchildren and the children were getting upset thinking about their elders who are now gone, and you know, you can't just sort of go there as a filmmaker or interviewer. You've got to just slowly make your way there and make sure everyone's comfortable and they want to talk about and they did. That's the best part about, I think, the research stage of this film is that we didn't have to convince the WIC people and their families that this is going to be a landmark film, and it's a significant story which will showcase the character of those elders and what the significance they meant to their WIC people, but also to the national story. So they didn't hesitate. Once they recognised that we were genuine, you know, production company, you know, an Aboriginal owned production company, genuinely want to get this right with best interests at heart, they were like, let's do this. And they wanted to get they'd bend over backwards to make it work and help us to get the right things we needed. So that's always a good sign that you're on the right track.
Deadly. And was any of them all shy when you put the camera in front of them?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, they are. And that's okay. Not everyone wants to do that.
Yeah.
But I think once we sort of just relaxed a little bit and I sort of showed them that this is not about them. This is about your grandparents and once they sort of recognise it, I don't have to tell, you know, it's about them sharing with the world who those people were. Once they got to get a sense of that, they're like, oh, great, let's do it. I'll talk about my grandfather or grandmother because they were a beautiful person and they would talk, you know, they just go and you go, here we go, now we're on a roll. And once they forgot about it, it's a good old thing, you forget about you got a microphone or a camera in your face, and you're just having a yarn. No different. You can say forget the cameras and the lights and all that stuff, and it's not really. They sort of did, but they. Once you get comfortable, you know, that's it. You can just share, and it's like anything.
If you're tuning in to Let's Talk this morning, my guest on the program this morning is Dean Gibson, director of WIC vs Queensland, a dirty documentary that has been in the making for the last 3 years with Dean and also with NITV. It was screened up in the community of WIC. They had a community screening and then also a screening down in Sydney. We'll have a yarn about the screenings that have been and also talk about where we can watch it as well. But we're going to go to a quick song break. You're listening to 98.9 FM. The song coming up right now is Titters with Changing Times.
Ooh. When you found what you're looking for, ain't no need to go looking anymore. Wrong way up a one-way street, make it right through the people that you meet. Read the signs, give me direction to who you might meet. Changing times, changing times. Close one door, open any other. I gotta keep moving. And in myself, I gotta believe. I gotta keep changing. Read the signs, give me direction to who you might meet.
Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And I was changing times by the Titters. You are listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. My guest on the show this morning is Dean Gibson, director of Wekaverse Queensland. Before the song break, we were yarning a bit about who Dean is, where he's from, and also the importance of this really, really deadly film. And Dean, you know, off air we were yarning about, you know, you've been pretty much all over the countryside, various different screenings, to the point where you're getting standing ovations in Sydney. But I guess, you know, before it all started, you know, the screenings, there was a really, really important screening that you've had up there in the community. Could you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, I think when we sort of went to the drawing tables on Wekaverse Queensland, we started with the research and wanted to get things started, and went up to Aurukun and spent time on the ground in Aurukun having cups of tea and bickies with the old elders and whatnot. We knew from day one that we wanted to make sure that the first screening of this film was going to be a community screening in Aurukun. That was in my mind, that was non-negotiable from day one. With the broadcasters, with the Screen Queensland, Screen Australia, all the funding bodies, it's made it pretty clear this is a priority, and it's going to. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the way it's going to be. So we, you know, you go up there and you film, and you go away and edit for sort of 6 months, and people don't hear from you, and you sort of touch base from time to time. Then we went up and did the screening, and we went to the little community centre up there and up in Aurukun, and we had a couple hundred people turn up, and we, you know, it's beautiful. It's outdoor, big outdoor screen, and you just sort of make do with what you can do, and you use what you can, and you be resourceful. Yeah. We had a great night, and you had a barbecue and a big cook-up, and people came along, and I think it was really well received. I think they recognise that this is a significant, powerful story. It was their story. And for one of the first opportunities in time, it's being showcased in a feature film, a feature documentary, and it's being showcased nationally, and it will go internationally, and it will tell that story of their people. And you could sense the pride in which they believe, in which they felt around that. You could sense that they truly were proud of those people. They were truly proud of who they are today, and it resonated through the screen. And I hope, and I've talked to a few of the people since, that it was just, you know, it was a magical moment for them to sort of see their elders come back to life. Because that's the interesting thing with this film is we were able to tap into years of archive film. So a lot of these elders who have now passed away, we had thousands of hours of tape of these people, you know, dealing with the Queensland government, dealing with the lawyers, dealing with going to Canberra, having meetings out in the bush with mining, all these different things. And for them to see those elders almost come back to life. And it was funny, you know, when I was driving into the town, I had to have a little moment just to think, oh, I'm not going to see these elders. When you work with the archive and you almost think these elders are still alive, if that makes sense. You're cutting them on the computer thinking, oh, yeah, this is great. I'll get to meet them. You go, hang on, no, this is archive vision. They're not around today. So it was really, truly greatly received, and there was a lot of tears and a lot of hugs and a lot of pride in what had just sort of happened. And then we got to go to Sydney. We world premiered the film at the Sydney Film Festival.
Yeah, deadly, yes. Just before we get on to the Sydney screening, so in the documentary you're talking to the grandchildren, but at that screening there would have been like great-great-grandchildren there that would have, I guess, maybe heard small stories of of the decision back in 96, but not really know the significance of it for their mob. How was it received, I guess, from the younger generation under the mob that was in the film, the grandchildren?
That's a good point you make, because a lot of the elders and even the sort of my age, that sort of 40, mid-40s, 50-year-olds said, I don't think our young people know this story. I don't. They may have heard a little bit, like you say, they heard a little bit of it here, a little bit there, but until they got the whole picture through their story, they didn't really understand that. And I had some young teenage girls and guys and girls come up to me after and say, "Thank you. I did not know that." We had one of the aunties in the film, Auntie Phyllis. Her granddaughter came up to her and said, "But Auntie, there's no end. The film doesn't finish." And Auntie Phyllis looked at her and said, that's because you're the ending of this film. This is it's now in your hands. This is a story that hasn't stopped on the screen. This is a story that's still going today." And she made the point of telling her that she's writing this next chapter of the film. And it's true, because it's in many ways it's a very relevant film then as it is today. So you could sort of see that Auntie Phyllis said, the girl's eyes just sort of lit up and, And so it's been really, really greatly received by the young people who it's fair to say knew little bits about it, but not a lot.
And then we'll get on the world premiere in Sydney, the screening?
Yeah. So we screened in Sydney for the Sydney Film Festival, and we had in the big state theatre in the middle of Sydney, and we brought a few WIC people down for the screening. So it was great to get them on the red carpet and have the big film gala, film moment. And we had 1,700 people in the crowd, in the audience. And I sort of sat in the far corner right near the door in case people who didn't like it get out of there and run to the hills. But it was well received, and it received about a 10-minute standing ovation at the end. And I was able to go up on the platform afterwards with a few of the WIC people and a few of the lawyers. And I said to someone afterwards, I said to the WIC people, that applause wasn't for the filmmaker or for me, or this was for those people. You know, this is after all that press of the day back then and all that rhetoric around the name WIC and what that meant back in the 90s, and it was almost, you know, it was become a bad name. It was almost bastardized. That Wick name finally, well, and it has been over time anyway, but we gave it a chance to sort of be celebrated and be shown as this really fantastic, rich, powerful story of these amazing people. Amazing people. And it was humbling, but it was just great to sort of see that Wick pride amongst those our visitors down in Sydney come just rise up through that realize that people, the audience, you know, people from Sydney, people from, you know, all different age groups, they understood the story. They understood the heart of the story and what these people meant and how powerful and what they could learn from it and how relevant it is today. So I think that was really nice to sort of do in Sydney. And then we got 10iTV for our big screening premiere and then it got beamed around the nation a couple of weeks ago on NITV.
Which we can still catch.
Yeah, you can still we can still jump onto the SBS On Demand. Just type in WIK, W-I-K versus Queensland, and you can watch the film. And you know, it's a big story. It's a big story. Wick versus Queensland. It takes us back 20 years ago to that Wick High Court case when the Wick people were fighting for access to their land, fighting for their identity, fighting for their native title, and they went all the way from Aurukun to Canberra, and they won. They won the High Court case, and it was celebrated across the country. The first mainland test of native title, and it was won by the Wick people. And we see all that in the film, and it was a joyous moment. But and I know you want to talk about that. On the flip side, then the Howard government took control of the parliament, and it all went a bit downhill from then on.
Yeah. Started a big smear campaign against not just, I guess, the Wick people and the success of their claim, but then also other Aboriginal people that not necessarily had a claim in all that, you know, had a claim.
Progressing in, through.
Yeah. You know, like, we were yarning off air before about, you know, you asked if I remembered seeing some of these ads back in the day. and I remember, you know, it's lock your gates, the Aborigines are coming to take your land. And in the trailer, actually, you're interviewing somebody and they're talking about the campaign and you know, some of the stuff that was being said back in the day. Yeah. Oh, you know, the Aborigines are going to come in and you know, steal your land and kill you and, you know, do what you know, we did to them. And, you know, like just trying to really, really, you know. Yeah.
Fear, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fear. Mm. Yeah. And the Wick people, and this is what I sort of try and talk about in the film, is that the injustice of that the Wick people won the High Court case in Canberra through played by the rules, you know. They went to Canberra, they went through the system, the legal system, they played by the rules. They presented their case to.
How long was that as well?
It was about a 2 year. Like it was really the legals were, and I guess you can argue when it began and ended, but it was sort of a 2-3 year cycle there where it all sort of began, and because it began in Brisbane. It was rejected in Brisbane and they appealed it and they took it straight to the High Court in Canberra because they recognised that this is a significant case that needed the High Court to the High Court judges to make their decision on. And they took their time, the High Court judges. It took sort of they presented in June and then the decision was handed down in December. So it took them a while to sort of work through the information and the High Court of Australia ruled in favour of the Wick people, 4-3. So it ruled in favour of the Wick and they were able to granted access to their native title on the pastoral leases. But the politicians weren't happy with the decision. They called them names, the High Court judges. They got on the TV. They said your backyards are going to be stolen. They said you know, black people are going to come and take over this country. Prime Minister John Howard held up a map on the 7:30 report and said there's a veto over 73% or something of the nation is under threat from these people. And you go, straight away, they weren't happy. And what did they do? They just sort of, they went straight to the press and straight to the media and ad campaigns, like you said, creating fear and doubt. And you know, the part of this film is in all that fear and doubt, people, we forgot about the weak people.
Mm.
You know, the new national media forgot about those people who actually were at the heart of this fight. They focused on politicians. They focused on shock jocks. They focused on lawyers. They focused on everything else, police, whatever. But they didn't focus on the weak people. And I think this is what the great part of this film is, that after 20 years, we've been able to look at that moment in history and make some calls on it and see what we think. You know, could we have done things better? But particularly look back 20, 25 years on and through that, through that archive and you know, I think it's a lot of lessons we can take away from it today. Mm. And I think that's the power of the story in itself today, is that the irony is we're in a very similar political environment now.
Yes.
As we were then. And we, in many ways, someone says to me, do you think we've actually improved our Aboriginal rights and place and voice at the table and voice at the nation? And I just say, I wish I could say yes, but I just don't. I just think it's an up. It feels like the hill's getting steeper, you know. We're trying, you know, and it's. I don't think we learned a lot from that Wick case, and I hope that through this film we can start to look at the next chapter of black and white relations in Australia using hindsight of that film to go, you know, we can do things better. We can do things better. We've got to be smarter and better. That's the reality. We can't just sort of put out fear and live our world with fear and all that sort of stuff. So,
did you think, you know, making this film, it would be received in the way it has been, but then also you'd be like sort of, you know, getting asked questions like, do you think, you know, things have improved? For, did you expect this thing?
No,
so it's been a bit of a journey.
Yeah, the timing just couldn't. But, you know, if as filmmakers, you never know when the right time is to release your film. You know, you know, the climate, the environment we're in, the landscape. But as filmmakers, we probably couldn't have picked a better time to actually to release this film. Where, you know, looking at political federal government and the way that they handle black and white relations and black the handling of Aboriginal people and issues and how we can now, you know, start to look at trying to do things a bit better. And no way, there's no way I would have thought I'd be on 98.9 giving social commentary, Let's Talk, or on newspapers giving social commentary on our political future. And you know what? I loved it. I've loved having people recognizing that this film works on so many layers. It works on just, it can start at the layer of the power of the WIC country and what it means to the people, but then it can come up to the next level of the legal battles and trying to fight in the system for your rights.
Mm.
But then it can come up to the political level where it can play out in Canberra, where it's about jockeying for you know, a play around politics and around trying to get your voice heard and get the position across the country and working with policy to try and do things a lot better. And I've loved that this film has all these different levels of sort of engagement. And you know, I'm a bit of a I enjoy politics. I love being involved. I love getting involved and having my say around things. And I'm like, I don't shy away from that. And as we all shouldn't, I don't think. And I think it's been great that I always tell the story. I was at the State Library of Queensland doing research at the old newspapers. You know, looking back at the time of, you know, when I say old, I mean 1990s. But looking back at the newspaper headlines and all that sort of stuff, and I flick on the microfiche and I see this. Pauline Hanson comes up on the thing in 1993, and I thought, I could probably walk downstairs in the cafe today. I walk downstairs to the newspaper shop downstairs at the library and see the exact same headlines, the exact same people, and exact same kind of rhetoric. And I thought, that's why we have to make this film. That's why we have to. We haven't. I mean, people might argue with me, and that's okay, but in many ways we haven't moved forward or we haven't advanced anything in any mature, considered and empowering sort of way.
And, yeah, like we see at the moment as well in North Queensland a big fight against the mining company and some Aboriginal people up there, the Wanglingu people, you know, having a big fight against Adani as well. You know, and sort of like you said, you know, it always plays out and always plays out. You know, we see these smear campaigns, you know, you know, from newspapers and news and and media and stuff as well, you know. It's just, you know, rolling out again.
And it's hard. You know, it's hard. Like, I don't sort of stick my head in the sand and think all minors are bad. And that's not, I'm not trying to point fingers at this film and say everyone's evil. That's not what this is about. I think, you know, we need to, you know, some people, and the truth is some people in North Queensland want mining. Some people don't. There's a mixed bag, you know. It would be naive to think there's not a mixed thoughts on mining or pastoral leases or whatever, and that's the reality. But I think if we can't have mature conversations about getting everyone at the table, and I think that this is what happened in this film, you know, Keating got everyone at the table. If we can't have that ability to bring our parties to the table and maturely work through things in a meaningful manner, what hope do we really have? I think there's got to be a level at some point where we've got to. It's not about compromising your values and ideals, but it's about saying sometimes there's going to be some give and take and a bit of arm wrestling around things, but ultimately we're in this together and we need to make this work for everyone.
Yeah.
And that, when I say everyone, not just the miners or the Aboriginal people or the councils or whatever, it's everyone. Everyone needs to, I think in my mind, needs to have a place at that table.
Definitely. And you've been listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. My guest on the program this morning is Dean Gibson, director of WickVerse Queensland. We're going to head to a quick song. This is Christine Arnoux with Because I'm Free. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.
Until the day I let the flag unfold, 'cause I'm free.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
I want our children to grow up knowing they will always and never give up. We people are warriors. We people are fighters. That fight, it's not conscious, it's instinctive.
We heard this news over the air. The Queensland government was going to take over Aragon without letting us know.
These were old people, right, who were defying government policy and going out and reoccupying their homelands.
A lot of rural properties throughout Queensland were all granted on pastoral leases.
We're worried about the mining north of Aragon and south of Weipa.
We call upon the people of Australia, who believe in the importance of protecting the environment, to join with the Aboriginal people of Cape York to prevent any further intrusion on our lands, seas and waterways by technological development or mining of any sort that does not have the agreement of the Aboriginal peoples of Cape York Peninsula.
Anyone who had covered Mabo knew that WIC was in the pipeline. And when the WIC case came, it became the next stick of dynamite going off.
Stanley Nappiong-Walker put a $25,000 cheque on the table and said, I want you to pursue my native title case for the WIC people.
The tension in local regions was palpable.
Pastoralists were being told they'd be murdered in their beds.
The case inevitably ended up in the High Court because the Queensland government was determined to stop it, and so was the Commonwealth government.
Was really into the past.
My mum said, I think this is going to be harder than it actually looks like.
The fear I had was that in this world, cases like this don't win. It's too big.
And that was the trailer for the documentary that we've been yarning a bit about. Yeah, it's a very, very powerful trailer as well. And like you said, it's been received really, really well all, you know, everywhere you've shown it, especially up in Aracoon where, you know, the mob are from. We're back on, you're back on 98.9 FM. My guest is Dean Gibson. We've been yarning about this, this deadly documentary. And we've been yarning about the significance of it, and the role that it plays today. In the political climate as well, when we have, when there are big decisions, you know, happening, especially up in Queensland, like we'd mentioned before with the Dani. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, putting it together and also after as well.
Yeah, it's been a big journey. There's no two ways about that. And it's been, I've seen it. Obviously, I've seen the film many times now, but the two times I saw it at the Sydney and at Aracoon and then also at my local Sandgate Town Hall, I was exhausted watching. Yeah. You know, you sort of invest so much into it and you want to get it right. You're just striving to do your best that you can do to honour the story and honour those people. Mm. So you're putting everything into it and I'm pretty exhausted from it, but... Yeah. On the back end of that, to see, as you said, the way it's been received, mm-hmm. and the way that hopefully it can be used amongst our institutions,
yes,
education, universities, movements, people, you know, town hall screenings. Hopefully, people will see the benefit and hopefully want to use that film, use WIC versus Queensland as a great example of how we can learn to move to work together between black and white Australia, particularly. From a federal government perspective, mm-hmm. down to the grassroots of community life or living.
Mm. Mm. Well, definitely, of course, you know, like there needs to be, you know, those formal discussions, you know, where there's sort of, you know, real traction in terms of the livelihoods of Aboriginal people and the futures as well. And, you know, documentaries like this sort of play into the relationship that, you know, can be built in such significant times as well for our people.
Yeah, I hope that it acts as a tool because, mm-hmm. You know, not everyone's going to pick up a newspaper and read about a feature article about black and white relations or not everyone's going to sit down and do a big internet article or watch the news. But this could be another pathway for people to go, we can take in, spend an hour, 85 minutes and take in this story and make sure we give us slow down in life, give ourselves an opportunity to actually watch this, and hopefully it can help us as a nation to move forward as well, but also give people who don't know the Wik people and Aboriginal history a sense of, I mean, that's what a lot of people said to me, I didn't know that. I've never heard that story. I didn't know. I'd heard little things about the Howard's 10-point plan. I'd heard little things about backyards, but I didn't know the big picture. I didn't know that it started up in Cape York and a bush meeting out under a tree and that it took this group of people to invest money into this and that they came down and then it all got taken away from them. I didn't know that. And I say, well, this is one story in a nation.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one. There's probably many more. I have no doubt there's many more happening and have happened in a similar vein all across the country. And it was a real pleasure to to showcase this one and work on this one, of course. And having North Queensland links to my family, you know, I love in the film, and you would have captured that in the trailer, some of those voices you would have heard. So, you know, Marcia Langton, Noel Pearson, Senator Pat Dodson, Kerry O'Brien, all these heavy hitters in our national landscape, all big national voices. And the beauty of our film is that we jump in a time machine, go back 25, 30 years and see all these people as young, energetic early 20-year-old professionals on the brink of their career.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, wow, we're getting an insight in not just to the Wik people, but these people, you know, I spent 2.5 hours interviewing Noel for his interview, 2 hours or two and a half hours, and I could tell that he loved just putting aside today's
work
and life and just reflecting as the young 22-year-old student or a 20, you know, that idea that, I could sense that he really enjoyed tapping into who, what got him going back then, and he loved telling those stories of those people. And they're all similar. Everyone loved going back in that time machine, thinking about themselves as a young 20-year-old on the brink of their career.
But this is not one of your first works as well. Want to yarn a bit about, you know, some of the stuff you've done previous as well, because, like, earlier in the interview I said, obviously there's a body of work to sort of come to put you in a position like this. What is, you know, the work that you've done in the past?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of documentary production for NITV. Our Stories Our Way. Mm-hmm. So I've done I think I've done more than 10 of those and a dozen of those. I did a big feature documentary called A War of Hope. And that was a really important story around Hopevale, actually, and the withdrawal of the Hopevale people around World War II. It was a story of the German missionary at the time was considered a potential spy by the Queensland government, the Australian government. So the Hopevale people were all overnight picked up on a back of trucks and sent down to Woorabinda, and they were pretty much, you know, boats, trains and cars, trucks to Woorabinda. They turned up to Woorabinda days later and they were pretty much just sort of put over in the corner and said, here you go, here's your new home for the next period of life.
Yeah.
A third of the population passed away.
Mm.
They weren't prepared for the cold. They weren't prepared with the health facilities and the food and water and whatnot.
When did that happen? So
Woorabinda.
What year?
Oh, 1940. Oh, now you're getting me. From memory, it's 43, I think it was. 43. So World War II, around World War II. Or 41. And, they were evacuated out of Hopevale. And the sad part of the story is they only got to go back to Hopevale 7 years later. So well beyond the finishing of the war. They ultimately were able to move back home. And so we did a big film around now the late Roy McIver, the artist from Hopevale, and it was based around his works, but also he was one of the last remaining, at the time, one of the last remaining survivors of that evacuation. He was a young boy and he lost a lot of his family and a lot of other people in that story lost their family, young kids, a lot of young kids passed away. They couldn't handle the conditions.
Yeah.
So that's a big film. And I think another big work that I directed was the Jessica Mowboy, the Sesame Street spot with with Jessica Mowboy and the Kangaroos. That was another big production where it's probably a lot of people might be aware of, sort of seeing Jess Mowboy jumping around the desert in around Alice Springs with animated kangaroos for Sesame Street. So I've got a large body of works, and without, you know, I always say to people, how do you do that? And it's like, well, it takes time. It's persistence. You've got to dig in and be prepared for the hard work, but it's also getting the opportunities from people around you. Like, in, you know, Screen Queensland here in Queensland support screen and production, Screen Australia down south in across the nation, and then NITV, the people there. You've got to have the people there want to work with you and be part of your journey as much as you're making shows, you know. That's the thing. And to have the great context and people who want to help tell those stories is a really great thing. And we're getting that in Queensland through Screen Queensland at the moment. We're getting that in Screen Australia and NITV. There's an appetite for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stories. And I don't know about what you think, Bo, but I think that they're the standout in terms of TV production, film production. It's probably the standout stuff that's coming out of the country at the moment, I think.
Definitely, of course.
So it's some great stuff.
And like, and that's literally the only sort of platform where you're going to see stuff regarding our people. And how important for you is it to capture these voices of, you know, these people, like, you know, like you said, of the mob from Hopevale? Like, how important is that?
Oh, well, if...
And all the stories that you've done with NITV.
Yeah. I mean, what a moment to get that on tape or on audio recordings, whatever you do, do it. If you've got an old grandfather or an auntie or something, sit down with them and pull out your iPhone, pull out your recorders, whatever you want to do, pull out anything and record their story. You never know what what gold they'll give you, and you never know what that will mean for your family moving forward or for the country. You know, there's all these people sit on things that they don't tell, and it can just unlock all these stories of heartache, pain,
triumph,
all the emotions, and they're sitting on this stuff, and you may not even know that. And if you just give someone the time to go, you know what, for half an hour, it's you and I, and we're going to record, I'm going to just have a yarn to you, and we're going to record it, you just never know what it'll be. And there's places like the State Library that are recording things like that. There's filmmakers, and it just builds up this fantastic collateral that one day you look back and go, wow, what a moment to capture of this history of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stories. When really it hasn't, you know, it's struggled to get that over the last 100 years. So to actually get some of that now is really nice to do and be part of.
Oh, no, it definitely is. I want to say a big thank you as well, brother, for coming in and joining us this morning on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. My guest has been Dean Gibson. You can catch the repeat 7 o'clock tonight, or you can visit 98.9 FM for the podcast. This has been Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.
I am Manoia, come a limmer out my I am Manoia, come a limerad o' my. Ya come a limerad o' my, oh my, ya come a limerad o' my, oh my, ya come a lim, my roar o' my. I have traveled far from my home because you said that I should go. King.